Okay, Rabbi, today's daf is daf Chof Tes, and we're holding six lines from the top of the Amud. As you recall, yesterday we learned that the height of the Menorah was 18 Tvachim, and we went through the whole Cheshbon of how it added up to 18 altogether. And now the Gemara says something very, very surprising. Omer Rav, Goyve Shel Menorah Tisha Tvachim. The whole height of the Menorah was 9 Tvachim. If you think about that, that means that the Menorah was a midget in a sense. Why is that? Because a Tisha Tvachim, 9 Tvachim, if you go and take a Tefach and assume that it's approximately 4 inches, 4 times 9 is 36. Yesterday we had, it was 4 times 18. 4 times 18, of course, is 72. 72 is the equivalent of 6 feet. So that would mean that the Menorah is very, very tall, 6 feet tall. The average individual today doesn't reach 6 feet. So the Gemara, in fact, asks, Eisvei Rav Simi Bar Chiel Rav, Eben Hoysa Lefnei Menorah Ubo Sholish Malish Sholeh HaKoyin Oimeit Umeitev Esaneirois, that there was a platform which included 3 malos, 3 steps, and the Koyin would go up those steps to get to the top of Menorah. Now, for those of you that remember what the European Jews looked like that came to America during or after the war, you remember many of them were quite short. 5 feet, 5 feet two, 5 feet four, etc. You remember Moshe Zatzal and remember Yankov Zatzal were great giants in learning, but they were short in terms of physical stature. That being the case, I can understand why they needed to have a platform to get to the top of a Menorah that was 6 feet tall. But here we're talking about, according to Rav, that the whole Menorah was only 3 feet tall, right? 9 Tvachim times 4 inches, 9 times 4 gets you 36 inches, that's just 3 feet. You wouldn't need to get to a platform to stand up tall to get to Menorah and then just have to bend over to be able to light the Menorah. So that doesn't sound right. So, Freiti Shimura Omalei. So, who asked this question? The question was asked by Rav Simi Bar Chia to Rav. So, Omalei, so Rav now responds, Simiat, oh, dos is Simi. Rashi says, Atahu, Hamakshale, Bitmiya, you're the one that asked the question. Ki kaminim isvas konim ulamala. When I said 9 Tvachim, I didn't mean from the base all the way to the top. I really meant only from where the konim go up and further. If you remember from the pictures yesterday, the konim started from 9 tvachim from the ground. So if you add 9 plus 9, you get 18. So basically, it was halfway. So Rav was saying, from where the konim begin, that's the essence of the Menorah. The rest of it is the base. So where it started from and going up higher, that was 9 tvachim altogether. So Rashi over here just simiat atu hamakshali. Elsewhere in Mesechtes Nida on Daf Chav Dalid, Rashi says simiat, my beloved Simi, because Simi was an enikel of Rav. Rav had a son by the name of Rav Chia, which presumably he named after his uncle Rav Chia. And of course, as soon as I say his uncle Rav Chia, immediately Barry and Brother Shai are going to compete. Who's going to be the first one to say that he was a double uncle from both sides, from paternal and maternal? And how do we know that? Because it's Daf Dalet and Mesechtes Pesachim, etc., etc. Yeah, okay, Baruch Hashem. So apparently Rav named his son after his uncle Rav Chia. And then Rav Chia in turn had a son by the name of Simi, some pronounce it Shimi. Anyway, so there in Mesechtes Nida, Rashi says, Simiat, oh, my beloved Einikol Simi. But here Rashi just simply says, oh, Simi, you're the one that you asked the question. The answer is, Min Svas HaKonim Ulamala. With this we have completed the discussion about the height of the Menorah. Now there is a fascinating medrash which is brought here in the Peninim Yekarim. The Medrash says at the beginning of Parshas Bahaloischa, Bosh Teitot in the Medrash, Bahaloischa es Haneirois, El Mul Pnei Hamnoira, Yeiru Shivas Haneirois. Says the Medrash, Hadohu Dechsiv, about this it is written in Nach, Pesach Dvarecha Yoir, kindly, David, if you'd be so kind, put yourself on mute, because we hear some background noise. Pesach Dvarecha Yoir, the beginning of your world words will enlighten the Asya Kimandi Yomar Yud Zayin Tvachim Hava Menorah. But this only goes according to the Mandiyama that holds that the Menorah was 17 Tvachim tall. Now we did not have that in our Gemara yesterday. We only had 18 Tvachim. And even today when we had the 9 Tvachim, we have amended it that it really means 18. It's just 9 from, we didn't amend it, but we clarified that the 9 is halfway and it's really 18 altogether. But there is in fact a Medrash which says that there is a Machloikis whether it was 17 Tvachim tall or 18 Tvachim tall. What is the pshat in this medrash that Pesach Devarecha Yo'ir, the opening of your words will enlighten? But according to Man Yomar, Yud Zayin Tvachim. What does that mean? So he brings here from Hagoyin Mishpetivka. Who's the Goyin Mishpetivka? I don't know, but obviously he was a very, very brilliant individual. Because yesterday we had a number of different dimensions. What are those dimensions? We start off with that the Menorah had 7 konim altogether, and then it had 9 parochim, it had 13 kaftoirim, and 22 gevim. Right? Everybody want to look back at that? It was roughly 10, 12 lines from the top, from the bottom of the Amid. That was the cheshvan of the 22. Then if you want to get to the just the norm and the numbers, 5 lines from the bottom of the Amid, the Nimtzu Gvian Esr Mushnaim, there were 22, Kaftoirim Achad Asar, 11, I may have said 13, I'm sorry, Kaftoirim is 11, Parochim Tisha, that was 9, the Konim was 7, and now the height of the Mizbeach of the Menorah, we said was 18, but now we see that it's a Machloikis, whether it's 17 or 18. Anyway, if you go to the beginning of Parshas Bereishis, the very first Pasuk, how many words do we have in the Pasuk? Bereishis bara elikim, Esa Shemayim ve'Esa Aretz. How much does that add up to?
7
words. 7 words is keneged the 7 konim. Okay. Now let's continue on to the beginning of Parsha Shemois. Beginning of Parsha Shemois, it's a little bit longer in terms of the first Pasuk. The Eile Shemois b'nei Yisrael, Gzuntai, that is 4. Haboim Mitzroima is 6. Eis Yaakov is 8. Ishu Vesu Ba'u is 11 altogether. What was 11? 11 Kaftoirim. Okay, very nice. Let's continue on to the beginning of Vayikra. Vayikra El Moshe, 3 words. Vayidaber Hashem Elov, 6 words. Me'oil Moed Lemar, 9 words. What is the 9 words keneged? That's keneged the 9 parochim. So we've taken care of so far the 7 konim, the 11 kaftoirim, and the 9 parochim. Now we skip Bamidbar just for a moment. We'll get back to it. And we're going to go to the beginning of Dvarim. Now, what's the beginning of Dvarim? That's a very long one. Eil HaDvarim, 2. Asher Dibir Moshe is 5. El Kol Yisrael is 8. Be'eva Yardin is 10. Bamidbar 11. Barova 12. Moil Suf 14. Ben Paran 16. Uvein Toifel is 18. Velob Mechatzera is 20. The Dizov is 22. That's Keneged, the 22 Gevim. So therefore we have taken care of so far the 7 Konim, we've taken care of the 11 Kaftoirim, the 9 Parochim, and the 22 Gevim. But we missed out on Sefer Bamidbar. Let's get to Sefer Bamidbar. How many words? Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe, 4 words. Bamidbar Sinai, 6. The Oil Moed, 8. The Echad is 9, Lachodesh Hasheni is 11, Bashan Hasheni is 13, Letzesam 14, Me'eretz Mitzrayim 16, Lamar is 17. 17 is not connected to Agamar. Agamar says that it's 18. But the Mandiyam and the Medrash says that it's 17. So good. Says the Goyim Mishpetivka, now we understand. El Mul Pnei HaMenorah, you look at the face of Menorah, and you say to yourself, how am I going to remember all of these numbers? 22 Gvim, and 11 Kaftoirim, and 9 Parochim, and 7 Konim, and then Ha'itim. Very easy. Pesach Nevarecha Yo'ir. Look at the beginning of the words of the Heilige Torah in each one of the 5 Svarim, and you'll find that it's exactly like we just said now in terms of the number of Parochim, and Kaftoirim, and Gvim, but only according to Mandiyama that says it was 17 Tvachim, because it was 18, then Bamidbar doesn't shtip. Good. So that's the word. Wow. A Goyim Mishpetivka shows you, obviously, he was a Goyim Oilam. This is Sefer. It's called Peninim Yekorim. Yeah. Okay, feel free to take a look. It's the beginning of Parshas Baloyscha. And we continue on. Zokti Maravaiter. Om Malei Shimi. Yeah, we already said that. Okay, Ksif. We're now about 10 or 12 lines from the top. We have now a Pasuk. The Pasuk is in Nach, and specifically in Divrei Hayomim. And it's telling us a little bit about the Menorah. Thank you. Ksif Ha-Perach V'Haneiros V'Hamalkachayim Zohav Hu Michlois Zohav. What means Michlois Zohav? So the Gemara dashes the word Michlois from the Lashon of Kiloi, then it's finished. Nothing more. My Michloi Zov, Omer of Amisha, Kiltsoi Lechol Zov, Sogur Shel Shloim. In Shloim Melech's time, there was a brand or a type of Zov which was considered to be the most refined of all. This was really top-tier gold. And the reason it got names of Sogur, says Rashi, is because if Yankel, for instance, sold Zohav Sogur, all of the competition, all of the competitors that were selling gold, closed their stores until Yankel was finished selling his gold. Because his gold was Zohav Sogur, it was such a beautiful, refined, top-tier gold that nobody else's gold was selling. Who wants to go and buy second-tier or third-tier gold if you can go and get the best quality gold?
So everybody, price control.
Well, it doesn't say that, it doesn't talk us about the prices. Just tells us about the quality. If you look at the Rashi, Zov Sogur, Rashi is just a line or two above where we are here in the Gemara. Zov Sogur says Rashi Shemeshah Shemoichern Oisoi. When this is for sale, you can buy the Zov Sogur. Nizgoros Kolachanuyais. All of the stores Shemoichern Es Hazov, they just close up because they know they're not going to have any customers. Who wants to go and buy 50 carat, if you can go and get 8 carat, or whatever, I don't know whether 8 is better than 50 or not, whatever it is. So, that's why everybody would go and buy from them. Now, as we'll see momentarily, Shlomo HaMelech, who was, of course, very, very wealthy, especially for purposes of communal purposes, for manufacturing the menorahs, as we'll see, Shlomo HaMelech was so wealthy that he cornered the market and bought up all the Zohav Sogur, and that was used for the menorahs, as we'll see momentarily. So that's the Lashon of Michloi Zohav, that in the time of Shlomo HaMelech there was no Zohav left, because he...
What happened to the menorah that was fashioned?
Well, we're not done yet. We can get into everything with Baruch Hashem.
Okay.
I'm glad that you're asking the question. Anyway, so Omer Avami Shekilzel Chol Zov Sogur Shlok Shloima, nothing was left. Omer Abiyuda Omer Avi, excuse me. Es Menorahs Osir Shloima. Shlomo HaMelech made 10 menorahs. These 10 menorahs were in addition to the menorah of Moshe Rabbeinu, and they were placed inside the Heichel together with Moshe Rabbeinu's menorah. There's a machloikus we're going to get to, Mir Shem, at the end of the Masechta, around Daf Tzadik Zayin, Daf Tzadik Ches. If you remember, you may or may not have seen yesterday, but there was a picture of the menorah on Daf Tzadik Ches Amid Beis. Beautiful picture, Tzadik Ches Amid Beis. Picture. Anyway, so there's a further discussion over there about these 10 menorahs. Exactly where were they? If you want to take a quick look on Tzadik Ches Amid Beis, right before the wide lines, Tanur Rabbanan, Mizruch, Marav Hayu Menachem, Dibri Rebbe, Rablot, Reb Shimon, Oymet, Tzofen, Vedorem, that there's a machloik is exactly where those 10 were placed in the Heichel, in addition to the regular menorah. They were placed north to south, or they were placed east to west.
What about
Matrices? One second. Yes, ma'am.
Same dimensions and same...
Same dimensions, yeah. The same form, all the same.
No, let's just make a copy of them.
That's what the Robert's asking now. Yeah, but in addition to that, the Gemara there has a machloikis whether they only used Moshe Rabbeinu's menorah for purposes of lighting the menorah, or whether they used... Another, they used those as well, or there was a rotation. Some say that they were there just artistic, but they were not used. Others say no, that in fact they were used as a rotation with Moshe Rabbeinu's menorah. So one day was Moshe's, and another day were the others. Anyway, that's going to be a discussion on Daf Tzadik Ches on the Beis. But getting back to our Gemara, the Gemara says it that Shlomo HaMelech added another 10 to this one. So Robert asked and Mendy asked, they both asked almost simultaneously, don't we have a problem of Baal Tosef? It's a very good question. The Gemara today doesn't address that. Hopefully Tzadik Ches will have more learning about that. Here we're just talking about the fact that the Zohav was used up to manufacture these additional 10 menorahs in the time of Shlomo Melech. Continue on the Gemara, Zot Gemara Yetzweiter. So there were 10 menorahs, Osir Shlomo, Chalachas, V'yachas. Okay, so now we have to go a little bit further. V'chalachas, V'yachas, Hevi lo, Elef Kikar Zohov, V'chnisuhu, Elef Pa'omim Lekur. What the Gemara is telling us is that Shlomo Melech was a real perfectionist, and he wanted that this gold should be the most refined gold possible. So what did they do? For every one of these menorahs, as you remember, we had yesterday in the Gemara that there was a kikar zohav tasa, or you say a kikar. I don't know exactly how much a kikar is. Let's say 10 pounds of gold, just to throw out an example. 10 pounds of gold. To get to that 10 pounds of gold, he took raw gold and he bought 1,000 kikar zohav, not 10 pounds, but the equivalent of 10,000 pounds, 1,000 kikar zohav, v'chnisuhu. And they took that gold and they put it into the kor, like the kivshan in the furnace. V'chnisu elef pa'amim lekor, 1,000 times they put it into the kor and let it get refined. They took it out, put it back in, put it take it out, put it back in, and until after 1,000 times, then we do al kikar. What was previously this huge 10,000 slab of gold now has been reduced to just one slab, from that 10,000 pounds just to the 10 pounds. Can you imagine a proportion, a ratio of 1,000 to 1? So that's how refined it became, and that's how it got the title Zohav Sogur. Everybody would like to go and get that gold because it was gleaming, it was shining. You could see it from here to Canarsie. That's how beautiful, how refined it was, etc. Says the Gemara Vaita, Aini, is that really true? It went from 1,000 down to 1. I voksev have another pasuk. V'chol kli mashke hamelech shloimai zohav, v'chol kli beis yar halavan and zohav sogur, ein kesev nechshav bimei shloimai l'meuma. Because of the fact that Shloimai Hamelech went and to use all of this kikar zohav, what happened was, that he took all of this zohav and he used it all. Says here in the pasuk, in kesev nechshav bimei shloimai l'meuma, the kesev was not worth anything, or at least was not considered to be worth anything in the times of Shlomo HaMelech. So, Gemara, didn't you just go and say that there's none of the gold left? If there's none of the gold left, because we were saying michlois zohav, that being the case, why are we saying that kesev is now worthless? If anything, it should be the other way around. If there's no gold left, then the next thing that you have to look to is silver, then silver should start going up in price. So just by the fact that you said in the previous pasuk that Shlomo HaMelech had used up all of the Zohav and took the 1,000 kikar and reduced it into one kikar, so you see that the Zohav Sogur was, Michloi Zohav was all used up, nothing left. So now why are we saying that in the time of Shlomo HaMelech, the Ein Kesev Nechshav, if anything, if there's no Zohav Sogur left, then the Kesev should go up and rocket in terms of the prices and the rates, and it should be worth a lot of money. And for the Gemara, Zohav Sogur Komrian, when we said before Michlei Zohav, it means that there was no Zohav Sogur left. But now, all the other shops reopened their stores because this top-tier gold was, in fact, used up, nothing left, but there is now the second tier, the third tier, the fourth tier. And therefore, that's what was the commodity that was purchased by everybody, and that's why the people didn't look at kesef. Everything was gold, 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 gold.
So to make the sagur, he converted 10,000 to 1,000.
That's correct. That's what happened because it was so he didn't do it intentionally. The point, he intentionally did it so that the menorah would be made out of the purest and most refined gold possible. But by the fact that they used up all of the gold to create the Zohav Sogur, not to create, he didn't use all of the gold, but they used so much, so now the Zohav Sogur, which was this top tier, now was no longer available in circulation, but now they had the other gold, which was of a lesser quality, but still gold. And that was what everybody was buying, and nobody was looking even to kesef because gold was considered to be the commodity for use and investment, etc. You told me that it went all the way down from 1,000 to 1. Is that really true? But Tanya Rabbi Yosef Yehuda Omer, Maas of Ohisa Menoyras Beis Hamikdash Yesera Al Shel Moshe Medin Zot. It was a time that they took the Menorah of the Beis Hamikdash and they weighed it, and they found that it was that the weight was one dinar zov kurdikni. One dinar zov kurdikni. Rashi says that was the name of it, Shem Madbea. That's how they called it, the kurdikni dinar. The art scroll says that maybe it came from Kurdistan, and that's how it got the name kurdikni, having to do with the Kurds. But bottom line is, the whole difference between the regular menorah, which should have been, and this menorah was that it was, the weight was a drop more a dinner zav. And to be able to remove that additional weight, so they did the same thing that they did in the time of Shlomo HaMelech, v'chnisua, pei pa'omim l'kor, they put it into the furnace again 80 times, v'midua al kikar, and that by putting it into the furnace 80 times, now we removed that dinner zav, and it came now down to a kikar. So now what's bothering the Gemara is, before we said that it took 1,000 times and it went from 1,000 kikar down to 1 kikar. So in other words, it was 1,000 to 1. And here we're saying that it went down from a kikar plus a dinar zav to just a kikar, which sounds like a much, much smaller ratio in terms of the refinement of the gold. One would have expected that much more would have been consumed if you're doing it 80 times, and all it consumed was one little dinner zav. We started off with that this menorah, which was one dinner heavier, however, had already gone through the process of the 1,000 times. So this was as refined as possible. So there's very little additional refinement that you can add to it. So you can do it 80 more times and only up to half an inch or 3 ounces or something fell off because it had been so refined already from the previous processing. The question is, it says, Al Menoira HaTahoira, the Menoira which was Tohar, pure. So now the Gemara is assuming we're not talking about Zohav Tohar, we're talking about the purity of the Menoira. That being the purity of the Menoira, what makes the menorah pure? Says Yomara, I'll tell you what it means. Shiordu masel mi mokum tahara. When Moshe Rabbeinu had to figure out exactly how to construct the menorah, as we'll see in the Gemara shortly, in the very famous Chazal, that Moshe Rabbeinu was somewhat baffled by all of the rules and regulations governing the menorah, mit the ala gviyim, mit the ala parochim, and he didn't know all the numbers because he didn't know this part of the Shpatifka about looking up Bereishis and Shemois and Vayikra. So therefore, it was a difficult task. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu, B'chvoydo Be'atzmoy, Kaviyachol, sent down exactly the way you're supposed to do it from Shemayim.
He only had Bereishis and Shemois. He didn't have the other three Svarim yet.
If you look at halfway down the Rashis, Mimokam Tahara, Min HaShemayim, Heru LeMoisha, Negan HaMenorah. They showed Moshe exactly what the Menorah looked like. They sent it down from Shemayim, so he was able to see. So that's the word Tahara, Al Menorah Tahara, that it sent it down from Mokam Tahara. Freke Mora, Azei, Elamayata, we have Al HaShulchan HaTohoir, that they put the Lechem upon him, HaShulchan HaTohoir. You're going to tell me there too, Shehodim Mahasa Mimogam Tahar, that in addition to the Menorah, they also sent down a replica or a form of the Shulchan from Shemayim down to us. Zokti Moravada, that's not the pshat, because we don't say that about the Shulchan. Ela Tohar Mechlal Shutame. The fact that it says a Shulchan Atar just tells us that the Shulchan is susceptible to becoming Tome. That being the case, Ochanami Tohira, maybe by Menoira, it's come to say Mechlal Shutameh, that it's susceptible to Tumah. So therefore, nothing to do with sending down Menoira's Menashemayim. Zokti Morav doesn't nishveh. Very famous Chazal. It says, Al HaShulchan HaTohar Mechlal Shehu Tamei. Mechlal Shehu Tamei means that it can become Tamei. Frank Tamara, it can become Tamei. After all, don't we have a rule? This is a Kli'et Han Osi L'Nachasu. V'chol Kli'et Osi L'Nachas Eina Mekabel Tuma. A Kli'et which is Osi L'Nachas. What means Osi L'Nachas? That it's never moved, it always stays in one place, is not Mekabel Tuma. How do I know that something which stays in one place is not Mekabel Tumah? Because it's a pasuk in the middle of Sefer VeYikra. where it talks about the Shrotzim, this is of course in Parsha Shmini, it says Mikol Kli Eitz, Oy Oyer Oy Sak, and the Gemara Darshans, what do I learn from Kli Eitz or Oyer Sak? Masak Metaltel Moli Verekam, Afkol HaMetaltel Moli Verekam. Sack is something that you go and carry. Sometimes it's full and sometimes it is empty. So too, if you want to be makabel tum, it has to be something which is susceptible to be metaltel moli vereikon. And when it comes to the shulchan, the assumption of the Gemara is it remains in place at all times, and therefore it's not metaltel. You're not metaltel it at all, whether it's mole or it's reikon. You just leave it there. If you have, for instance, in your dining room or in your living room, a bookcase or a vitrine or whatever fancy term you call it, you just usually buy it once, you install it, put it in whatever you put in, and usually you never move it for the rest of your life, unless you buy a new one eventually. But ultimately, you just leave it there for the next 10 years or 20 years. So wasn't that the same thing by the Shulchan? And if therefore it's Ikli 8, which is Osi Lenachas, Chol Kli 8, so Osi Lenachas, Einoi Mekabel Tuma, so what are you telling me, Al Shulchan HaTohar, that it is susceptible to be mekabel tumah? It's not. It's a kli eitzah osel lenachas. And for the Gemara El Malame, this teaches you a very important lesson. Shemagbiyin oisli oyle rigol, that three times a year they used to go and pick up the shulchan from its place in the heichel. They would take it at least to the doors of the ulam, and they would go and do somewhat of a demonstration. Umarim lehem lechem upon him. They would show all the oile regel that were assembled there inside the Azara, thousands of people. Va'im lehem, and they would go and declare to them, Reuchi baschem lefnei hamakom. Look how beloved you are in the eyes of Hashem Yisbarach. What is that chiba, my chibaschem? Okay, so they see the shulchan and the lechem upon him. So vos is, Rishum alevi, Rishum alevi, neis kodol nasib lechem upon him. There was a gewaldigness by the lechem upon him. Silukoi kisidurai. When they removed it, it was like they installed it. What does that mean? Everybody knows the lechem upon them. They used to go and bake it, and they would install it on the shulchan every Shabbos. They left it there for a week. A week later, the kahanim would take out the old lechem upon them, and they put in the brand new lechem upon them. So now you would think, lechem upon them after a whole week. By now it must be a little bit stale. After all, it's been out of the oven, out of the freezer for a whole week. Shnemar, no, that was not the case. It says in the pasuk, Losum lechem cham biyoyim hilokchay. When they took it off of the shulchan, it was still fresh and it was still nice and warm, like when they installed it 1 week earlier. Presumably there was even a little bit of smoke and steam coming up, and therefore everybody could go and see, wow, unbelievable, it's a week later. And therefore that shows the chiba yaseir HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to Kaisa. Anyway, the bottom line is that when it comes to the shulchan, that's the reason why the pasuk refers to shulchan hatohar, to tell you that yes, under certain circumstances, it can become tamei if tmeim touch it. It's a kli eitz osel lenachas generally, but not at all times. Three times a year they picked it up, and therefore it is susceptible to tumah after all. And at this point, it was shulchan tohar; it was not tumah.
It had poles for carrying also installed, right?
Exactly. Good shulchan,
no, which means it was sort of standing. It's only to be moved. It's
very good. Shkoyach elohaka tohayra. Here, when we're talking about the menorah, I don't need a pasuk to go and tell you mechlal shi tamei that it's susceptible to hilchis tumah. Fishteitzah pshita kli matches nino kli matches mekablam tumah kli matches, even if they're osi lenachas, they're mekabel tumah because they're not part of that pasuk of the kol kli eitz oyer oisak. That being the case, why does the Torah have to go and tell us that it was a menorah Torah? Elishar demasel mi makom tahara, rather than go and tell us, like we said before, that since this was a difficult situation, so to speak, Kadosh Baruch Hu showed the blueprints or a replica or a copy or whatever to Moshe Rabbeinu min hashemayim, and that's mimokum tar. Similarly, the Gemara told this Tanya, Rabbi Yosef Yehuda Omer, Orin shall eight. I'm sorry, shall eish v'shulchan shall eish u'menorah shall eish yordim min hashemayim v'ra Moshe v'asa kimoisem. Kadosh Baruch Hu sent down from heaven in fire the orin, the shulchan, and the menorah. Why? So that Moshe Rabbeinu should know exactly how they're to be shaped, in what form, what size. Shenemar ura eva say kisavnisam asher atamore bahar. Vasa, you'll be able to see with your own eyes, Moshe Rabbeinu. Vasa, you'll be able to manufacture it and produce it. Kesavnisim, like the Tavnis, like the replica, like the form that you saw, Asher Atamora Bahar, that you were shown there at the time of Harsinai. Elam Yatav Rei Demora, we have a similar pasuk. Vaki Moises HaMishkan Ki Mishpatai Asher HaEisa Bahar. Hachanami, you're going to tell me that the Moshe HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent down the ganze Mishkan, just like he sent down these three, the Oroin, the Shulchan, and the Menorah. Because it says here also, Kimishpatei Asher HaEisa Bahar. What's the difference between Mishpatoi and Sav Nisam? Rashi says Mishpatoi means a Kodesh Baruch Hu sent down an instruction manual with all the halachas. You see, Rashi says Hocha Ksiv Ki Mishpatoi Mashma Hilchoisav Nemrulai, the halachas of the Mishkan. Yo yo yo. Hosam Ksiv Ki Sav Nisam Mashma Deru Kimoisam. See, here it's like a picture, so to speak, and there it was a lot of words. So that's the Mishpatai, and this is the Kisav Nisam. Omer B'chir Bar Abba, Omer B'yochanan, Gavriel Chagor K'min Pesika Yehoya, V'herloi L'moyshe Ma'asa Menoyer. So B'chir Bar Abba said the name of B'yochanan, Gavriel, that's Gavriel HaMalach, Chagor K'min Pesika Yehoya. He used to go and wear something similar to a belt, that's how Rashi seems to explain it. Ezer Koruch Umnim Shiroitzim Lasim Malocha Noah Choygrin Atzman Shalyu Nigrorim Bibidein. Although Rashi says Azor, which means a belt, I think Rashi really means something more similar to an apron, that these are work clothes that the workers wear to make sure that their begodim don't get somehow verschleppt in the work that they're doing, so to go and separate their clothing from everything else. So Gavriel was wearing such a Chagorkim and Psikayoy. And what did he do? And he brought the menorah down and showed it to Moshe Rabbeinu. This is what the menorah has to look like. Three things were bothering Moshe Rabbeinu. Sheherlei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu pointed with his own finger. What are those three things? Menorah, v'reish chodesh, ushratzim. The form of the menorah. Reish Chodesh explains Rashi is referring to the moilid of the Levana. Exactly how does the Levana look at the time of the moilid that you now can go and call the new Chodesh, Reish Chodesh? Ushratzim, which of the Shratzim are the ones which are Temeim and which ones are not among the Shemoyne Shratzim Temeim? What is Gemara? How do we know these three things? Kodesh Baruch Hu, Herloi Be'etzpa, because each time it uses the word Zeh. I'm pointing with my finger, says the Kodesh Baruch Hu Kaviyachal. Look up in the sky at this time and you'll see exactly the size of the new Levana, so you'll know that the Chodesh has begun, the brand new Chodesh. That is the Chodesh Zelechem Rish Chodoshim. And Shrotzim Dechsev Zelechem HaTomei. After all, there are Shmoyne Shrotzim. Today, we don't really know the identities. We think we know, and there's some chumashim that have definitions, but nothing is really crystal clear. So in the times of Moshe Rabbeinu, he also didn't know which reptiles are yeah and which reptiles are nisht, which are mitmeim. There are no such things as kosher reptiles in terms of eating, but in terms of tumah v'tahara, only the shmoyne shrotzim are mitameh. For instance, if you have a dead snake and you pick it up, you embrace it and you kiss it, you do not become Tameh unless somebody discovers that a snake is among the Shemoyne Shratzim. But I've not heard that. So, any animal that dies is an Avela. Yeah, that's Metameh. But not any reptiles. Only reptiles that are Metameh are those Shemoyne Shratzim, the Achpar and the Haltor and the Tinshames, all those which are listed in the Torah. The Yosh Amrim, others say that it wasn't just three things in the Kodesh Baruch Hu, like the Etzba, but Af Hilchot Shchita Shenema V'zeh. Even though we're talking about Mizbeach, but the first thing that you do for Mizbeach in terms of Kodshim is to go and Shecht. So Kodesh Baruch Hu showed exactly, Moshe Rabbeinu, exactly how you Shecht. What was the difficulty? Rashi says that it shouldn't be a Mugremes. Mugremes means that one Shechts outside of the zone where one's supposed to Shecht on the neck of the animal. We're going to learn more about that in Mesechtes Chulin in Yetz Hashem. And in fact, the Gemara there says that another remez of Zeh is 12, that they used to do 12 bedikas on the sakin before they would allow the shoychet to go and shecht. He had to go and test it on his fingers and on his nails and on his tongue. Anyway, Mitchum will get to that when we get to the Sechet Zchut.
Wasn't there also the shekel? A machti the shekel? There's a shekel.
Yes, but that's not our Gemara.
Okay.
Maybe we'll have it tomorrow. Maybe we have another time. Our Gemara doesn't bring that. Now there is a we had earlier on about Shlomo HaMelech, and that Shlomo HaMelech made his 10 menorahs. And interesting,
That's
kasha. That's kasha. Shekel. Oh, yes, very good.
Twice the barn.
Oh,
in middle.
Oh, good, good, good. Yeah, so it was a twice.
Shmaya. The choshev machzah shekel. It says that you do a minion to min the peya.
Yes, right.
Oh, good.
The shayich hasan is kasha. I'm from Yoda. Yoda. From Indian.
Aha. So here at least you had a basic idea. Just didn't know exactly. There, Tois is suggesting he didn't know at all. He didn't know at all what we're talking about when we're talking about the Master Shekel, what the size of the Shekel was, which Shekel, whatever. So, if we have to be Mara. Okay, Shkoyach Mendi, Shkoyach Barry, thank you for asking. And we were talking about Shlomo HaMelech, and we said about Shlomo HaMelech that he made 10 additional menorahs. Okay, so there is, and we also mentioned, we just mentioned
Shulchanos.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. But we're not going to talk about that now, right? But thank you for reminding us. Did our Gemara mention there were 10 Shulchanos in our Gemara?
Not yet.
No, not yet. It only said that he sent down a replica of the Shulchan. It doesn't say anything about the 10 Shulchanos. It only says about the 10 Menorahs. Anyway, beginning back to our Gemara, particularly now that it talked about Gavriel, so this is not recent, you know, going Mishpatifka. This is a Balaturim, who is already a Rishon. The Torah was the son of the Rosh, as many of you know. And he was the Mechaber, the Balaturim, besides writing a Pirush al Torah, he's the one that put together the Arba Turim Shulchan Aruch, and our Shulchan Aruch is based on the Torah. Anyway, so in the Pasuk in Parashas Baloischa, it says, V'zeh Masi Menorah Miksha Zov, Ad Yurecha Ad Pircha Miksha Hi, Kamara Asher Her Hashem Es Moshe, Kein Osa Es Ha Menorah. So now we just had Kamara Asher Her Hashem Es Moshe, says the Balaturim, Kamara Gimatria Gavriel. Shegavriel, who Sheheraloid Mus Hamanoira. The Balaturim over here doesn't say what his Makoir is, and the art scroll didn't put in a Gemara, but that's our Gemara here, Gavriel. So figured out at home, you'll find that Kamara is the same as Gavriel. But then he continues on, Kain Osa Samanoira. Kain is Chof Nun, is 70. 70 Neiris, because Shlomo HaMelech made 10 Menoiris, and every one of the Menoiris had 7 cups on top, 7 lights, so 7 times 10 is 70. Kain. And Osa, how much is Osa? Osa is 375, Ayin is 70, Shin and Hey, 375, that's the Gematria of Shlomo, Shin, Lamed, Mem, Hey, Shin is 300, Lamed, Mem is 70, 375. So therefore, the Kain, Osa, Semenoira, Shlomo HaMelech, already merumas in the Torah many generations before that he's going to make Cain, he's going to make 10 menoiris, each one with 7 neirois, and Osa is Shlomo. Fine. Getting back to our Gemara now.
So the fact that Kodesh Baruch Hu showed Moshe Rabbeinu these 3 different items, do we therefore draw the conclusion more than he showed it to him, that he also produced, that was produced for him?
There's a Rashi in Mitchem in Parshas Truma, maybe even by Yaakov, that Moshe Rabbeinu, after everything was said and done, still couldn't figure out, or they couldn't chisel it, or they couldn't form it, or whatever, and in fact, it came down min ha-shamayim, the menorah. But that's not our Gemara. Our Gemara just says they showed them the forms, and Moshe Rabbeinu said, oh, now I understand, now I know, etc. Could also, of course, be on a more Kabbalistic level. It wasn't just a question of the physical menorah. He wanted to know all the Tahara and all the Kedusha that is involved. Kadosh Baruch Hu showed him that as well, all of the esoteric Kabbalistic inyanim. Anyway, getting back to our Gemara. Yes? Mimokam Tohar. So Rashi said, Min HaShemayim Heru L'Moshe Negan HaMenorah. Min HaShemayim, they sent out. So this is similar to the Gemara later on. Kadosh Baruch Hu sent out like a Menorah Shalesh, the Moshe Rabbeinu should see it and say, oh, now I understand exactly where the Gevim and the Prochem, the Kaftoyim, where they're supposed to be situated, and with their form, especially those, the Gevim, at that time they didn't have yet the modernish types of Gevim, the ones that were long and narrow. So Kadosh Baruch Hu showed it to him at that time.
Together with the Shulchan.
Okay, together with the Shulchan and together with the Ora and together with the Oren. Oren Shalesh, Shulchan Shalesh, Menor Shalesh. Good. And continue more. Right. Shtein Parashi Shemizu. So now we leave in Yinyanim of the Menorah, and now we go to the Stam. And this is going to mention, we're going to learn Stam now for the next few days. Stam is Sefer Torah and Tefillin and Mezuzahs, Rosh HaTefes. Okay, Shtei Parshas Shemezuzah Ma'ak V'Zu'azu. This is already a quote from our Mishnah. Two Parshas and Mezuzah that Shema Voyim Shemoya. V'Fil Ksav Echem Ma'akvan, even one ois. Rashi in the Mishnah said even one ois is Ma'akiv. Pray to Mar Pshita. If you got to write it, you got to write it perfectly. You can't leave out a letter. Om Rav Yudah Marav, Le'nitzvah El Kutzah Shuyur. It's coming even to say the Kutzah Shuyur, not only the Yud itself, but even the Koitz. Now, what exactly is the Koitz? Rashi says regularly Yemini Shul Yud. That is the right leg of the Yud. While the Toisis disagrees, if you look at the last Toisis over here, Pirish Pekundus, regularly, Mini Vekosha, Topshita de Einze Ois. If you didn't write it correctly, then of course it's no good. Rather, it's talking about the head of it, which is a little bit bent over. Now, in terms of the Koitz Shul Yud, apparently from Rashi and Toises, Rashi saying it's the leg of the Yud, Regel, while Toises says that it's the Rosh, which is the top. However, the article brings three Pshatim, not only the Rashi and Toises, also the Rosh. And it shows you three points. Shkoyev, thank you. For those of you that want to see it, you have here three points. Here's a little bit of a fake picture.
Right.
You see Rashi on the bottom.
Yeah.
Then you see Toisin.
That's why
it's
the right leg, because there's a left. I was thinking, what's the right leg? There's only one leg to a yud.
Yeah.
I see the sort of like the beard, chin, okay. The chin below.
Okay. Shkoyach. Those who want to see it a little bit larger now.
I've never seen it.
Well, now you're seeing it. Rush. You see the Rush is on top. Rush's suggestion, and then he brings a bit of time, and then he brings the Rashi on the bottom. Right. So the same thing over here.
Okay.
You say the Rosh, he brings Rosh's suggestion.
The Rosh has the Rosh?
The Rosh is on the Rosh, and then he has the Toisis, and then the Renitam, and then the Rashi. So it's three different points on the Yud, but each one is a Koitz, it comes down kind of to a point, and therefore make sure that it's done properly, because if you don't do it properly, Chas V'Shom, they could pasul the Gantz Mezuzah.
Is every Yud in the Torah also? Mezuzah?
You didn't like that in the Torah, but it doesn't. Doesn't have that same degree of pasulus. The is a much greater degree of pasulus when it comes to sefer to tefillin and mezuzahs, as well as in a sefer Torah. If you find a problem, you can go and fix
ask
it any time.
You also ask a child.
We're going to talk about that in the Amud Bas. But in terms of the pasulus of an ois, if in fact you find that something is missing, you can go and fix it any time you want. However, when it comes to tefillin and mezuzah, it has to be dafke in order. So if there's a problem in the middle letter, then you cannot just go and fix it. Depending, of course, on the severity of the issue, you may have to put the whole thing in Shemus and get a brand new parsha for that tefillah. Anyway, so the Gemara says, Vaita v'anami pshitam, and if the way you write the yud, you have to write it with every one of these points in the top and the side and the bottom. If you didn't do it properly, it's ma'akev. We're talking about the fact that it has to be mukav gvil. Gvil means blank parchment. What does that mean? What it means is you can have the best and most beautiful ois. What happens if there's a drop of ink and that connects this ois with the ois next to it, the one in front, the one in back, the one on top, the one on the bottom? The point is that it doesn't have blank space all around. It's not gvil mukav l'mearbel. So that also sulam also passes it. So that is already a big chiddush. I would say every one of the oises is perfect. Okay, so then one got attached to the other. Nishkeferelech. We're not talking necessarily that there was extra ink. Just that the soifer either wasn't careful when they folded it. The two oises somehow got close together, and now they're touching each other. So I would say, okay, so what's this? No, it's possible. Omer Ashian bar Nadvach Mishmed Rav Yuda Nikif Toichei Shol Hey Kosher Yerechai is possible. It depends on where there's a nekiv. Nekiv, there's a hole inside the Toichei Shol Hey, then it's okay, it's kosher. If it's in the Yerech, it's possible. Now, what does that mean, Toichah Shel Hay and the Yerech? So the two pshatim in Rashi. If you look at the Rashi in the very last line, all the way in the bottom, Toichah Shel Hay, regel shel bifnim. Now, you all know that a hay looks like something similar to a dalid, and then with a small little fissel on the left-hand side, which is not connected to the top, but it's kind of on its own. So therefore, what Rashi is saying is, if there's a problem with the Toichah Shel Hay, that's the regel shebifnim, that's the klein shigah, that little one, we would call that on the left-hand side, Rashi shebifnim, that is hanging, and it's not attached to the rest of the hay. Oh, so there happens to be a nekev over there, it's kosher. Because there, it could be a little bit higher, it could be a little bit lower, it can be a little bit smaller, that you have a little bit more flexibility. But Yerecha, if it's on the right hand, Rashi says Yerecha, regular Yaman is, if there's a hole smack in the middle of that Yerech, oy, it's possible. However, not in all cases. Rav Zeira says, I heard a Kirish from Afuna. Rav Yankov, I heard from Rav Yehuda, that when do I say, Nikiv Toicha Shel Hay Kosher Yerechoy Im Nishtaye Boy Kishir Ois Ketana Kosher Vim Lav Pasal. We just finished saying that Nikiv Toicha Shel Hay is kosher. What does that mean? It's not kosher if there's a hole anywhere in that leg, only if the hole is low enough so that in between the top part of, I'm going to call it the Dalit, of the hay, the dalit is like the top part, and then coming down from it is on the right hand side. So if the hole is so far up that there's virtually no leg left because of that hole, we're assuming once you have the hole, the rest of it is kind of like it's erased, as if it's gunished. So if there's nothing left, then it's possible. One is a kosher if there's enough space of that has been written and there's where the ink is still before you get to the hole, and that size is large enough for a shape of a yud, nishtaibai kashir ois ketana, like a small yud, that's already kosher. But if the hole is high enough that you don't even have that anymore, then it's possible. So it all depends on how high or how low the hole is on that right leg.
Hole is the leg or?
Okay. You see this resh in the word yikarim.
Right.
Act as if it's a hay. We're going to ignore now the left leg. We're only going to talk about this right leg. So if the hole is right over here, or the hole is over here, or over here, it's still kosher, because from the top until you get to the hole, you still have enough space, like making a yud. Rashi says, the Gemara says, ois ketana. If you have enough space for ois ketana, it's good. But if the hole is so high up that it almost hits the top of this hay, then you're in trouble. So it has to be lowered down so you still have a tiny hay. You don't have a big hay, you have
a
tiny
hay. A
necka means a hole. So you have a hole in it. So anything below
that. From side to side in the leg, the hole.
Yeah, exactly. Goes
the
whole thing.
The dalit part, the leg of the dalit.
Of the dalit part, exactly.
So if it's kosher. Punctured in the middle, or you're talking about where
function anywhere in that leg.
In the vertical
leg, not the top, but in the vertical leg. So yeah. If it happens to be low down enough that you still have a leg extending from the horizontal,
right,
then it's kosher. How long does that leg have to be to still be kosher? Actually, the Gemara says kishir ois ketana, like a small ois. So therefore, you're left with like a yud.
If it's vertically, the length, the height of a yud, it's still kosher.
Right. However, if it gets so small that there's really nothing extending, it's not even kosher for a yud, so to speak, then it will be possible. So it all depends on how high up and how low.
You have a split leg there. I mean, it shows up.
Split leg, exactly. You're talking about the vav in Sholem by Parshas Pinchas.
Right.
Exactly.
That was the whole shaila there.
100%. So here's the same thing. If the hole is too high up, there's no leg left
to stand on.
To stand on with Shali, and then the whole thing is possible. However, if there is a shtickle leg, it's ketana, at least like a yud, almost as your cushion. Him la possible.
Sure, we had an issue in the kolel, talking about if it was.
They're learning Hilchos Tam. That's correct.
Yeah, no, but they have a shear, and there were certain things that we were all nispala that was that it seemed like this type of thing that you could still continue reading and it's kosher.
We can talk about that in the Amid Beis. Okay. Seeing more tells us now Agra Chamua Dirab Abba. The person's name was Agra. He was the shver of Rav Abba. If Sika lay kara de hay, he had a problem that the hay that he had in his mezuzah or his tefillin was, or Rashi said the tefillin was ogahat. Kare means the leg of the hay was cut off. Now where was it? Hay of the word of the ha'am, of the word ha'am. So now in some of the Gemaras they have the Torah or Shalom exactly where that ha'am is, and the other Gemaras does not. This one does not. Anyway, where was that in the parashas for Yikviyacha? That's why it has to be in the tefillin, because in the mezuzah you don't have Yikviyacha, you only have Shema or Yim Shemoya. So let's see where we can find it here. Going to look now in Parshas. Oh. Parshas, both, thank you. So now we have Kaddish Likol Bechor Petr Chorech of Yisrael. It says, Yoyim Moshe Al-Om El Ha-Om. That's the Hey of Ha-Om. That's also Kaddish Likol Bechor, is one of the Parshas in the Tzvillin. And what is Zain Ha-Om? That if Sikale Kara De Hey De Ha-Om Benikva. There was an Ekev over there. And he, Agra, was beside himself. Is it kosher? Is it not kosher? Asla kam de rababa, omalei, nishtayir, boy, kishir, ois ktana. If from the head of it down into the leg, you still had enough sticking out of the vertical, large enough to have an ois ktana like a yud, kosher. Vimlav, however, if it's so high that there's basically nothing left of the leg because it's been totally perforated there, then possible, then it would not be kosher. And Rumi bar Tamri, now our Gemara's expression is, or our Gemara's text is, Dehu chamua de Rami bar dekuli. Rami bar Tamri, who is the shver, or was the shver, of Rami bar dekuli. The Meforshim ask from this Gemara on the Sefer Chassidim of Rabbi Yehuda Chosid that says that when you're marrying, you should make sure that the shver and the edim do not have the same name. You have the same thing by women, right, that the Shviger and the Kala should not have the same name. So many, many people are very, very makbid on that. Anyway, the point is, here in our Gemara, although Rami, the first Rami is spelled somewhat differently than the second Rami, but they certainly have the same pronunciation, Rami and Rami. At least that's the way we would pronounce it. So they ask, the Chayr, we see from the Gemara that they were not makbid that the Shver and the son-in-law had the same name. So therefore some say, in fact, maybe this Rami should be pronounced a little bit differently. We pronounce it Rami, but since it has extra aleph, maybe you should say Rami or something like that. So it's not exactly the same. And this is a geferlich. But in fact, there's another girsa, which is the girsa of the Shita Mekubetzis in my Gemara Shinui Neschayis, that it takes out the word chamua, rather Rami bar Tamri dehu Rami bar Dekuli. Rami had obviously had a father. But his name, either the father's name, or maybe because Rami was in this business, or maybe because he owned palm trees,
right, he had Dekuli, right, same name.
So Dekuli is the tree itself, and the palm trees grow tomorrow, and they grow dates. So therefore, that's how he got this double name. Some people refer to him as Rami Bar Tamri, some people refer to him as Rami Bar Dekuli. But really, it's the same name, it's just a different form. You're talking about the tree, or you're talking about the fruit. Anyway, all of that is fascinating, but how does that get to us? If sikale kara divav deviyaraik. Now, where is this vav of viyaraik? This is in Vahoye Kiviyacha. That's the next parasha after Kaddish Likol Bechor. And we will stay through in the pasuk. Vayehi kihiksha fara lishalchenu vayaraik Hashem kol Bechor be'eretz Yisrael. Oh, vayaraik. So what happened in the tefillin or of this individual, of Rami bar Tamri? So it says that the Vav of Vayaroik had in it the Kara of the Vav, the leg of the Vav, the Vayaroik, Benikva. It also had this type of hole in it. We didn't talk about that until we only spoke about the hay. Now we're talking about the hole in the Vav of Vayaroik. Also, comes the Reb Zayda, Amalei Zil, Aisi, Anuka. Now let's see whether a child who's Lechakim Vle Tipish, who's not the brightest in the world and not the most foolish in the world, in other words, of average intelligence, go and bring him up and see how he's going to read it in the Torah. Ask him, how do you read that letter? Kosher. Eloi, then Yehorig hu upasal. In other words, if the Vav is so short that it no longer looks like a vav because it's been perforated, and now the upper part looks like a yud, so it's like two yudin back to back, even though our Gemara only brings one, but that's what he means. Yei horeg, that of course is wrong. It's not vayareg, it's yei horeg based on that reading. So see if you can find the child, let him take a look, let him read it, and you'll see how he reads it as if it's a vav or if it's a yud, and that will be your indication.
It'll be a creek sieve.
Except, yeah, oh, good. Okay?
Yes, I had someone didn't have oil.
Didn't have oil?
Yeah, freezing.
I can imagine.
They didn't have money either.
That's a bigger problem.
They had Shelley.
Oh, that's good. So let's continue on. Look, you want to write this is a very, very famous chazal, a famous maisa. The maisa on the surface is easy to read and to understand, but in terms of depth, it's very, very hard to understand. So there must be a lot of Kabbalistic, esoteric meaning to this. And ainli esek bin nistaros. So we'll just read the Pasha de Taich. So when Moshe Rabbeinu went up tomorrow to Shemayim, and presumably for purpose of Makabal the Torah, Matzal Kadosh Baruch Hu Sheyoshev Koisek Ksorim La'Oisis. So the Kadosh Baruch Hu was writing Ksorim. Ksorim means crowns. We refer to them as Tagin. The reason why it's called crowns, because if you turn, for instance, to the picture of the Zion here in the Toisvis, you'll see that it has three Tagin coming up, and it looks just like a crown. Good. See, so Kadosh Baruch Hu is making crowns and tops of the letters. Who's pushing you to go and make these crowns? Rashi explains, you know, I look at the Torah the way it is, Kadosh Baruch Hu, without the crowns, it looks beautiful. I mean, the best sofer in the world wrote it, Kadosh Baruch Hu Kaviyachal himself. It's great. What do you have to add these additional designs for? Amalai, so Kadosh Baruch Hu said, you have a good point, Moshe Rabbeinu. But Odom Echad Yesh, Sha'os Liyos, Besoif Kamadayos, is going to be a person that's going to be. Who are going to be born many, many generations later. V'akiva bin Yosef Shemoy, that's a famous Rabbi Akiva. Sha'asek lidroish al kol koitz v'koitz tili tilin sholachis. And every one of these koitz, every one of these little tagin on top of each ois, he's going to go in darsh and heaps, mounds and mounds of halachas. For those of you who are wondering, where are all those mounds and mounds of halachas that we learn from koitz? So the article says that there is a sefer called Oitzer Midrashim, and in that Oitzer Midrashim there's a whole section or a whole book of the Midrashe Akiva ben Yosef, and those Midrashim are all based on drashes on the kutzin on top of each letter. We learn Tilitun Shalachs. Amalafanev, Rebbeinu Shalom, Hereoli, said Moshe Rabbeinu, if there's such a great giant, I want to meet him, I'd like to see him. Amaloisa Kadosh Baruch Hu says, Chazor Lacharecha, turn around and go backwards, and he did that. And he found himself in the classroom together with, or out in the open, in Reb Akiva's Bismedish, where they were learning. Halach v'yosha b'soif shmoyne shuris, he sat eight rows behind, and he heard the discussion between Reb Akiva and the Talmidim, v'lo yadeya mayen oimim, and he didn't understand a word of what was going on.
This was a Kabbalah, and they were doing Kabbalah.
So Tarshish Koichai, so as a result, he felt very shvach, he was very distressed, disappointed, upset, anguish, in pain, any other synonymous terms. However, at one point when they were discussing one particular matter, the Talmidim said to Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi, minayim lecha, how do you know this halacha? Don't you know that's halacha l'moshe m'Sinai? Oh, it's the Ashvedites, and Moshe Rabbeinu felt much better that he was being quoted in this discussion, and that what he had received from Kadosh Baruch Hu, that was now a major foundation of the further part of the shir. So he felt very, very much better.
He had an ego. He has the biggest anav in the world.
Again, and this is very hard to understand on the simple level, because Moshe Rabbeinu was one of ma'od mikol adam eshal pnei adama. He was the person with the greatest humility. We're not talking about that he's displaying false modesty. We're talking about a person that was really, really modest.
It's so funny because I just saw in Reb Chaim today, it says that when Yisrael says to Moshe, you'll become weary, all the Nevi'im, when they heard Ed Nevuah, they fell down on the floor. And Moshe was the only one who could stand. So for his koach to be weakened is a lowering of his Nevuah, as it were.
I guess so. Yeah.
And they had to know about the crowns, because there are three crowns. One's the crown of the Torah.
Oh, very good. Chazer Balavnik.
Maybe he felt, you know, that we had the story of Rav Moshe, that he didn't remember, you know, he got the daf wrong, you know, so he's thinking, I'm giving over the Masorah, and I don't even know all these things. How could it be?
He's relying on his memory.
Right, relying. Mm-hmm. So he's saying, no, it's all part of the... Mm-hmm.
The Arts Co brings that in different generations they learned Torah with a different
approach.
A different approach. Fine. You have, for instance, today in all the yeshivas they learn according to the Brisker Derech. This was unknown before the Briskers came to the world. Before the Beis Halevi and Reb Chaim Brisker, they learned, shall I say, in a different form, a different Derech. In fact, there's a Mechaber of a Sefer who lived at that time, who writes in his Akdama, I don't remember the name, writes in his Akdama, I'm writing the Sefer and publishing it quickly because I see the Derech HaYeshivas and the Derech HaTorah has now changed radically ever since the Beis Halevi and Reb Chaim Soloveitchik. I want to get it out before this becomes totally passé. So people should.
So instead of being dragged out, they made it brisker.
Beautiful. Gevaldik. Anyway, so the point is that the Moshe Rabbeinu, when he learned it in the Mosaic way, right? In the Moshe Rabbeinu tradition. Mm-hmm. Others in later generations, they learned it a little bit differently, and he, Nishkechap, what are they talking about? You know, mm-hmm. I'm familiar with some Soifas and Rebbe Kiva Eger, but I'm not familiar with this new Derech of the Brisket. Mm-hmm. So, afterwards, when they had to quote Moshe Rabbeinu, Baruch Hashem, we're going back. It's the same Torah, even though it's being learned on a slightly different approach. Anyway, Chazer Balavnei Kachbaruch, Omlefan Rebbeinu Shalom, Ishlecha Odom Kazeh, you have such a great giant like Rebbe Kiva, that he's Toyrish, Tili Tilim Shalalachas, and every Kutah Shal Yod, that the Nuzim Torah Al Yadai, why do you give the Torah through me? You should give the Torah through him. Omaloi, so Kachbaruch said to Moshe, Shtoik, quiet, Kachol Machshav Lefanei, that's what I decided, and that's my decision, and finished. Omlefan Rebbeinu Shalom, Herisani, Tirasai, you've shown me the greatness of his Torah. Herani tzchorei. Now show me what his ultimate payment is going to be, his ultimate tzchar. Amalai, he told him again, chazor lacharecha, go back, turn around. Chaz lachoyrev, and he did. Rosh shoiklin besorim makulin. He saw Nebuch, a terrible, terrible spectacle. What was this? That we all know that Rabbi Kiva had a terrible fate, where unfortunately they scraped all of his flesh off of his bones with his major combs, with his major brushes, and to add insult to injury, that flesh that was scraped off was now being sold and weighed in the public meat market. Can you imagine? This is the Gadol Hador, this is the Rebbe Kiva, the Gadol of all generations, and that's his schar. That's what I decided, and that's the way it is, whether you understand or whether you don't understand. So, none of us understand what happened 80 years ago in the Holocaust, 100 years ago, but that's what the Kadosh Baruch Hu decided, and it's beyond our wisdom to understand. Omer Rav, Shiva Oisius Trichos, now we spoke about Stam, we're getting back to the Tagin again. Shiva Oisius Trichos Shloisha Ziyunin. Ziyunin means like Tagin, meaning that every Tag is like a short vertical line. So there are seven Oisius that require these three vertical lines. Elohim, those seven letters are Shatnes Getz. Shatnes Getz means Shin Ayin Tes Nun Zayin Gimel Tzadik. For those of you that are not familiar, next time you get an aliyah, look clearly in the Torah, and you'll see on the left head of the shin, there are three heads, the left head, you'll see the three tagin coming up. The same thing on the ayin on the left, the tes on the left. Nun, of course, only has one, and the zayin only has one, so straight up. So the zayin, for instance, you see the picture over there that they have in the toys, it's the second and third picture, you see the three ziyunin standing up, which is like a crown. Amravashi, chazina lehu lesifrei davkani. Davkani means meduyokim, it's if it says daikon instead of davkon. I saw the svar meduyokim de beirav, the chatri lehu legage deches. The word chatre means that there is a tag sticking out of the head of the ches. Now the question is, what does it look like? So now we have a machlokes between Rashi and Tosis. On the left you see the Rashi has the ches, and on the left hand side you see ashtikla sticking out. And Rashi says, kechoiter kazeh, and they say that choiter is the same word as chutra. You remember chutra is from the chad gadya. So chutra is a stick. Mm-hmm. So it's like a stick standing up at the corner of the chaz, sticking out. That's how Rashi learns. Tosis, however, learned that it's like the chutra shal gamla, chutra sa de gamla, which means the hump of a gamla of a camel. And if you look at the Tosfos here on the right hand side, he brings first the Pshat of Rashi with a ches with that left hand stick sticking out, and then you see on top of the ches he has the picture of the two Zions. On top of it you have like a triangle or a pyramid on top of that. That's the chutra de gamla, the hump on top of the of the gamel. If any of you have seen a camel, even if you haven't seen a physical camel, you've seen in pictures, you see there's a hump there in the middle. Mm-hmm. So that's the hump sticking out, and that's what he called the chutra. Toisus's picture is Zayin and Zayin. The Ksav Ari is a Vav and a Zayin instead of a Zayin and Zayin. But it's basically, so our chesen and our Sifrei Torah are like Toisus pshat with that shtickle chutra de gamla on top. And the foot of the hay, which is the left-hand foot, is hanging. In other words, it's not attached on the top or the bottom, but rather it is hanging. Now, by the ches, going back to the ches again, we talked about the chotrule, that was the chutra, that's either that tag from the left-hand side like Rashi, or the hump like Tosis. What's the reason for that? So the way Rashi learns that you're talking about that there is this chutra there on the left hand side, it's as if it's pointing straight up. You're there. Why? This happens by the ches, because the ches is meramis on chius, on chai shoichim rumi shaloyim. If you look at the Rashi in the middle of the omid where they have the picture, chatri legage the ches, legage shel ches uisin lemala and chutra kazeh. That ches with the left hand take. Kolim Kadosh Baruch Hu Chai Shoichem Merumi Shalem. Kadosh Baruch Hu is living Kaviyachol up all the top. Ches Hainu Chai. So the word Ches stands for like Chai, and therefore it's pointing upward and says the real Chias. Everything stems from up above.
You saying the Ches and the Sefer Torah are like the Tosfos with the inverted V?
Yeah, the V on top. Correct. Okay. Next time you get an Aliyah, look at it.
Yeah.
Well, if you want, remind me and I'll check. Okay. Since you want Kolim Chai Hu Merumi Shalem. The tole le kare de hay, we already said that, tole le kare de hay, and you pick up the hay, it's hanging, it's not attached. Ki de boi mene Rav Yehuda nesiyah me Rav Ami. Rav Yehuda nesiyah, ain't he called Rav Yehuda nasi, he's specially called nesiyah to differentiate between one and the other. So he asked Rav Ami, why does it say in the Pasuk? Bitchu v'Hashem adi ad ki bekoh Hashem tzur oylamen. So he didn't really explain what was bothering him, so Rav Ami answered, O Malay, have faith and trust in Hashem, and then Tzura Lom, you're going to get the benefit of a machse. Machse means like a shelter in two worlds. That was not my question. My question was, why does it say in the Pasuk, isn't it referring to Hashem Yisbarach himself? Why? Ki? Koh Hashem Tzur Elam. The Pasuk is telling us two names of Hashem, like Baruch Ato Hashem Elikeinu. We have two names together here too. Koh Hashem Tzur Elam. What's that? Bik Koh Hashem Tzur Elam. Halchikashvi Maishna the Chsev Bih with a base, but like Siv Koh alone. Kedar Shem Yehuda Bar Rabbi Loi. Elu Shnei Olam Shem Baruch Hashem Baruch Hu. Echad Bihei Vi Echad Biyud. The word Bik Koh, the way we're darshaning, doesn't mean that Hashem created. We already have Hashem Tzur Elam. But Bekah means Hashem created the worlds with the letters Yud and K. What does that mean, Yud and K? One of the worlds, meaning Oilamim, one Oilam Hazeh was with one, and the Oilam Abba was with the other. Ve'ini yedeh im Oilam Abba b'yud v'Oilam Hazeh b'K, im Oilam Hazeh b'yud v'Oilam Hazeh b'K. I don't know which one is which. Kishuayim, it says in the Pasuk, Eile Tadu Shemayim v'aretz b'hi baram, with an extra hey, I'll take her b'hi baram, ela b'hei baram. It's coming to tell you that this world was created with the hay, and the other world, Oilam Abba, with the yud. You're going to ask, why was this world created with the hay? It's similar to an open porch. It means we have three walls. Whoever wants to leave can leave because it's open. You don't need to open the door, it's already open. So here too, when you're dealing with the hey, yeah, that they were opening the door, closing the door, right? Anyway,
they said
so,
you don't have to leave because they got the tent.
And therefore he's saying the same thing is by vis-a-vis the bottom of the hay, that you can easily, the world was created with a hay, so anybody can enter or leave from the bottom of the hay. We'll see in a moment what the importance is of that. Why is the left hand foot hanging there, not attached to the top, like the ches? So what we're saying is, person is living in this world. He should go and be an erlich yid, and he should go and mekayim all the mitzvahs. What happens if chas v'sholem he's off the derech? He can easily fall through from the bottom. Now, what happens if he wants to become a baal tshuva? He has to go and climb up and get through that window between the top of the hay and the foot of the hay. Why can't you just go back the same way that you left? In other words, every entry is typically also an exit, so, or every exit is an entry, so if you can exit through the bottom of the hay, why can't he just climb back up into the hay if it turns out that he's becoming about tshuva? So that's not going to work. Says the Pasuk, If a Yid wants to mitayir himself, the Kaddish Baruch Hu is going to go and help him out. The person wants to mitame, Kaddish Baruch Hu is not going to help him, he's going to let him do what he wants to do. So the point is that if Chas V'Sholom a person wants to mitame himself, the Kaddish Baruch Hu leaves this world as a hay, plenty of room, you can fall through, no problem. You want to return, it's going to have to be a little bit more effort on your part. You can't just go state the same way that you left, because it's easy in, easy out, then chas v'sholom you fall out again. You have to go and really try harder and exert more energy, and therefore you're going to have to come up on the left-hand side and go through the window of opportunity to return to tshuva. And the Rambam brings it based on this, that anybody that has fallen through on any particular chait, it's not enough just to get back to the middle of the road. You really have to go all the way to the other extreme, and then as a result, over time, for instance, if a person was a miser, unfortunately he didn't give tzedakah, it's not enough that, okay, now I'm doing tshuva, I'm going to give tzedakah like everybody else. But rather he should go and give extraordinary amounts vis-a-vis his own means, so that this will then be mechaper, it'll get him one extreme to the other, and then over time, eventually, he can then become regularized like everybody else. But to go and do tshuva, it's not enough to go and just be like everybody else. First, you have to go to the extreme, and then you can go and go back to normal. Anyway, my time is late taga. Why is there a tag on top of the hay? I'm a Kaddish Baruch Hu, choizer boy, and he koyshaloi kasher. If he returns to society, to Yiddishkeit, then I'm going to go and give him a crown on top, that tag on top of the hay. That was the gabi this world. Because unfortunately, when you get to Olam Haba, you find that there were not too many tzaddikim. How come one of the parts of the yud is kind of bent over? We looked at the three different parts of the yud before. Many times the tzaddikim will look at the other tzaddikim and say, wow, he's much greater. He's a tzaddik with a capital tzaddik, and I'm a tzaddik with a klein tzaddik. I'm a tzaddik like him. So therefore, they bow their heads in awe and in respect to those that are even greater tzaddik than themselves.
The hay isn't one of the shot in the sketch letters, though, is it?
No, it's not.
Okay, so we're saying it has a little crown. I'm looking at the Tosfos now. Isay taga. Hay has a tag. It has a little crown, but it's not a shot in the sketch letters.
You're 100% right. If you go back to the Shatnas Getz, what did the Gemara say? Amar Rava, Shiva Oisis Trichos Shloisha Ziyunim.
Thank you.
They have three tagan on them.
Thank you, not just one.
Just like not just one or not just two, they have three. And that's the Shatnas Getz, and that's the Zion that we had the picture there with the crown. But here they have, and the Ches, only have one. They don't have three. Anyway, getting back to our Gemara, Amar Rav Yosef, Hani Tarti Mili Amar Rav Bitzvarim. There were two things that Rav said about Sifrei Torah. The Tanya Tiyufte, and I have kashas from Brises on both of what Rav said. We're only going to focus on the first. Tomorrow, Mitch, I'm going to get to the second. What was the first thing that Rav said? And we ask a kasha in him from a Brisa. Chod hondi am Rav. Rav said that Sefer Torah sheish by shtei teuyas b'chol daf v'daf yisakin. Sholosh yigones. Any Sefer Torah where on one daf, as you know, means three or four columns in a Sefer Torah, if you find in that up to two mistakes, you can go and fix it. If you find three mistakes, you have to put in Geniza. Three is like a chazaka. You see that this is irreparable. No good. However, Tanya Tiyofta, the Braisa says that's not the case. Sholoi Shisakin, three of them you can still fix. Arva Yigonis, when it's four, then you're getting into trouble and you have to put in Gnisa. If you look through the whole Sefer Torah and you find one daf which is b'shleimis, in other words, flawless, then you do not have to go and put anything into Gnisa. You just fix as many mistakes, even 4, 5, 10 mistakes, just fix them up, because at least they have one daf shleimah, which is all b'shleimis. Omri Yitzhak bar Shmuel bar Marta Mishmei derav v'hu dechsiv rubei desafra shapir. When did we go and say that you can go and clean up the act of all of those faulty dafim? That's daf if roiv of the Sefer Torah is good. Now, what means roiv of the Sefer Torah is good? So there is there should be a Rashi with a shito or shin in the schoiz. Via the Rashi, Matzelus Akulon. Shafilu, oh, you see, if you have Matzelus Alkulon, about 10 lines in the bottom, Shafilu tuyos b'chol daf v'daf, oz Matzelus aleim hach daf shleima umesake. As long as you have one solid daf with their own, no mistakes, then even if you have tuyos b'chol daf v'daf, now how much of the tuyos b'chol daf v'daf? So you have a shinu neschoyes, I think here, lamed beis, Shafilu yesh boi dal tuyos, he brings four, but then there's another one that says even if they're five or L. So now you see lamed gimel, as long as the roiv of each daf is okay, that you don't find more than 8 or 6. Now, 8 or 6 is strange. So the Mefarshim say that it's very possible that the Shmoina is a printing mistake, and that originally this was written Hey Oivav, and then when they went and expanded the Hey Oivav, someone made a mistake and thought it was a ches or a vav, and they made the ches into shmoina and the vav into shisha. Shisha is correct.
You have to get rid of that shitim kabesis, because obviously it's a toast there.
Okay. Okay. Anyway, regardless, the point is, and just like you have the problem with the safe study,
exactly. But
the
thing, that was my joke. Okay.
I got it. Yeah. It took me a while, but I figured it out eventually. Okay, but shkoyach. Anyway, so again, as long as roiv of each klaf is good, even though they're 5, they're 6 mistakes, this is good, at least roiv. Omle abayler of Yosef, he is bahu daf sholish tuya ismai. We said that if one of them is shleima matzelus al kulay. Now, what happens if it has only 3 mistakes? According to the Braisa, less than 4, 3 mistakes, you can fix. What happens if that daf shleima, which is matzelus al kulay, has 3 mistakes? Is that also fixable, and is that good for the rest? Since we said under that price that if it only has 3 mistakes, you can fix it. So fix it.
And
now we have a daf shleima.
Now
I fix the whole sefer. Exactly. All of these problems are if you're talking about letters which are missing. If you have extra letters, but then that's the nishgeferlich. Then even if it's more than 5 and 6 and 8, it's okit. What's the problem? It looks like it is spotted. Now, how does it look like it is spotted? So, if you look at the Rashi at the top of the Omid Aleph, Lamed Omid Aleph, Mechse Kimenumar, Kishakoyisiv Umagia Boy Hashitim Esmasha Chiser. Now, in the Rashi itself, you have to go and make a change. It doesn't mean Magia Boy Hashitim, but rather if you look at Yud Aleph tells you, Marsho Higia Elishakoyisiv Umagia Bein Hashitim. In other words, what happens if you're talking about that there are missing letters? How do you go and kvetch a missing letter? So nowadays what they typically do is they try to go and erase the letter in front and the letter in the back, and then you make it in, squeeze it and clean shiga letters, but it's not so beautiful. The good old days, many times what they used to do is they would go and put it in between the lines. Every time in between the line there's always space. Yeah, so they would add a little aleph, a little beis, a little yud, a little dalet, whatever, in between the lines.
How is it? What's the
above, in the empty space above the
line. Like a carrot.
Like a carrot, right,
mark,
exactly.
Editor mark.
Exactly. But if you did that only one time, two times, you just come out. But if you have over here and there and the top, the bottom, the
leopard.
Looks like a leopard.
It's not looking like the old-fashioned footnotes.
Yeah, the old-fashioned footnotes. Right. Exactly right. So therefore, it says Gemara, it looks like menumer, and therefore that's ugly, and there's a din by a sefer
Torah.
Okay, says the Gemara. Now, last line, agra chamuder baba. We had him at the bottom and top of this omid, right? We now have him twice. Havale yaseiris b'sifra. He had yaseiris b'sifra. He also comes to baba. Omalei. Le'amor, and the whole concern that we had in the Numer El B'chaseiris, we're missing letters, because you have to fill it in between the blanks, between the lines. Of Yaseiris, let's talk about Nish Gefeilich. Now, so, exactly. Now, before we continue on, Idach is the other Rav, because we started off that there are two of Rav. Now, the Gabi the Yaseiris, as you just said now, you're supposed to erase it. Other Rishonim learned that if it's Yaseiris, you can leave it. You don't even have to erase it.
Just keep it as if it's not there.
Yeah. It's as if it's taken out. However, Toisis is quite upset about that. You look at the top Toisis. Yesh Toyin, there are people that make mistakes. Kishim Misupakim, Beteva, Im Malaya, Im Chaser. They're not sure whether you write it with a yud, without a yud, with a vav, without a vav. Sha'oisan, Oisan Malaya. They do Malaya. Why? Mishim Yaseiris. That's what we just said. No problem. Therefore, Toisis doesn't say expressly, but he's implying that those Toyim feel that you say, just leave it there. So, Nishkefer, you have an extra eyes. V'la Milzi, what they're saying is wrong. Docha might be say to Shigorra, you gotta erase it. Since you're erasing it, then it doesn't look like Manuma because you don't have these extra letters here and there, even though you have spaces, but anyway, you have spaces in the Torah, as we know. So you have another space here and there, it doesn't look like Manuma. But the others seem to are implying, Toisis is implying that those Toyim felt, oh, if you say it's not a problem, just leave it there, you know, I won't do anything. So said, no, you have your Seiris, you have to go and erase it, but at least it doesn't have that same severity of the Menumer aspect as if you have with the Chaseiros. Wow. Have a wonderful day, Rabbi Yisrael. May we continue tomorrow's Zayin.